You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Welcome to the latest podcast from the Foundational Questions Institute.
First up, we want to give you money. FQXI is giving away $2 million in our latest large grant round. Let me give you a clue about the topic. Zia, if our podcast is playing in a forest and nobody is there to hear it, does it make a sound?
Are you suggesting that nobody listens to these podcasts, Brendan?
Oh, no, no. It's a hypothetical, a thought experiment. Imagine if the FQXI podcast is playing in a forest and there's nobody there.
Well, then how did the podcast get there?
What? Someone was having a picnic in the forest and they dropped their phone in the forest.
And the person who dropped it didn't hear it playing and just left it? This seems very unlikely.
Yeah, well, just forget it. This topic of the latest FQXI large grant round is physics of the observer. Right, so if there is no podcast observer, would it still make a sound?
Sounds odd.
Anyway, physics of the observer. To quote from the grant announcement, the development of physics in the 20th century led to a peculiar sort of polarization in thinking about the observer. Prior to quantum mechanics, an observer was largely seen as irrelevant. Physics was about objective reality, observer independent. Quantum mechanics directly contradicts this view and requires a much more nuanced understanding of the observation process and what an observer is. So we ask you to ask questions like, what does being an observer mean? What sort of physical system has the properties required to be an observer? And are there any interesting questions to which the answers depend on how we think about observers? Many more possibilities exist. For more details, please go to the website fqxi.org.
And the deadline for initial applications is the 20th of January 2016. Now, what other big announcements were made in physics over the past few weeks?
Well, only slightly less exciting than the launch of the new FQXI large grant was the announcement in October of the Nobel Prize in Physics, which went to Takaki Kajita and Art MacDonald, who showed that the ghostly elementary particles called neutrinos can change identities, or flavors, as we call them, as the neutrinos travel. This shifting had confused physicists who thought that neutrinos were just disappearing when actually they were changing form. Kajita's team discovered that neutrinos from the atmosphere switch between two identities on their way to the Super Kamiokande detector in Japan, while MacDonald's team showed that the neutrinos from the sun were not disappearing on their way to Earth by capturing them with their different identities when they arrived at the Sudbury Neutrino Observatory in Canada.
After the Nobel announcement was made, I called up Katie Mack, an astrophysicist at Melbourne University in Australia, who has worked at Super Kamiokande in the past. This is what she had to say about why the discovery that neutrinos switch flavors is so important.
I mean, the main thing the neutrino flavor change tells us is that neutrinos have mass, because they can't change flavors if they don't have different masses. And they can't have different masses if their masses are all zero. And the big thing about that is that the standard model of particle physics, which is the sort of incredibly successful model and includes the Higgs boson, the standard model of particle physics in its basic form doesn't include neutrino mass. In the standard model, neutrinos are massless. And so this is really the first thing that directly contradicts the standard model of particle physics. And we've known about it for a while. The neutrino mass discovery was or sort of solidified in 1998. So, you know, this isn't exactly new, but it's the first thing that says, you know, we really do need to revise this model. We need to go beyond our sort of basic understanding of particle physics. So that's, I think, a big significant aspect of it. It was certainly exciting. And I do remember when this was all happening because I was just getting involved in neutrino physics at the time myself. And so I remember hearing about this new discovery and jumping into the field, and it was a time of great excitement.
One of Mack's research areas is dark matter, trying to work out where most of the mass of the universe is hiding. As she pointed out, the neutrino results also have implications for the hunt for this invisible substance.
So another thing about neutrinos is that because neutrinos do have mass, And because they only interact via the weak force, they are technically dark matter. I mean, they're not the dark matter. We know that at least the kind of neutrinos that we've been able to detect, they can't constitute, you know, the 85% of the mass of the universe that we can't see. But they are technically weakly interacting massive particles, so they are a component of dark matter. And they're the only ones we've been able to detect and identify. So as a dark matter physicist, I think that's kind of a nice thing about neutrinos. They're proof that it is possible for a weakly interacting massive particle to be out there and have properties that are similar to what we expect the dark matter particle to have.
Another interesting point that Mack made was these discoveries built on the work of a huge number of people involved in the experiments, and that it's a shame that the Nobel Prizes only acknowledge, at most, three researchers in their science categories.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's hard with big experiments like this because, you know, there are hundreds or thousands of people who work to make these experiments happen. I mean, you talk about Super Kamiokande, that's a massive experiment. I used to work on that a little bit. It's always a little bit of a shame to just give the prize to the leadership when there's so many other people involved in an experiment.
That was Katie Mack. We should say that Zia spoke with her a couple of weeks ago. Since then, the Breakthrough Prize in Physics was awarded for the same neutrino finding. But the Breakthrough Prize of $3 million will be shared between 1,300 physicists across five neutrino experiments.
So what do you think, Brendan? Which is the better way to go? The Nobels remain a highly exclusive club, but in rigidly sticking to awarding only three people or less for each science award, they often snub people who have made significant contributions. On the other hand, the breakthrough prizes seem fairer in acknowledging the contributions of everyone involved, but that dilutes out each prize and maybe loses them some prestige. Which do you think is better?
Well,
putting you on the spot there a bit, Brendan.
With all due respect to the people who do win the prizes, who deserve the recognition they get, I think it's ridiculous that you don't acknowledge everyone involved, at least as much as possible. I mean, there's not just the many students and postdocs and other researchers, there's the administrative staff, the technical staff, the IT department, the people who install the air conditioning to keep the computers from overheating. And all these people are doing things which are crucial to these experiments actually getting done. And to give the award, to single out individual person, typically a white person and almost always a male, just because their name is at the top of the grant, just to me is against the spirit of science.
Oh, well, so quite strong feelings there, I guess. I mean, not sitting on the fence there at all. Ridiculous to give it to one person. But you made an interesting point there. So I actually interviewed Arthur MacDonald for a story for Nature about the breakthrough prizes and how they kind of contrast with the Nobel Prizes. And one point he made was that the Sudbury Neutrino Observatory, which he worked at, it's an underground experiment and it's 10 stories deep. So it was an enormous engineering task just to even remove that amount of rock from under the ground before the experiment even began.
And, you know, Dr. MacDonald obviously had an important role to play, but there are so many other roles, too, that are being played that deserve credit.
You know, I agree with you and I agree with Katie that it is important to acknowledge everybody involved with these experiments. And it is a shame when you see something like, you know, the Nobel Prizes where they stick so rigidly to the rules, or actually, I don't even think they have a hard and fast rule, but they seem to have this sort of fashion or trend where they've decided to only give the science prizes to at most three people. And you do see some horrific snubs happening year after year where, you know, people who've made significant contributions don't get a mention. Having said that, I mean, you know, it is very nice to see a lot of people acknowledged with the breakthrough prizes. But when you're giving prizes to thousands of people, I don't know, it seems like maybe it does diminish the prizes slightly if everybody's getting a prize. But, you know, maybe there's some middle ground there between just giving a handful of people a prize and just, you know, giving everybody in physics a prize. But I don't know. Anyway, I'm linking to that story that I wrote for Nature addressing the contrasting styles of the Nobels and the Breakthrough Prize on the podcast page www.fqxi.org/community/podcast.